If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager, and you can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. Got all the usual line mates with me this evening, and we actually like planned to do this episode and like no big news things happened. So we're just going to have just a regular good old fashioned Musings on Madison episode. It's going to be great. We're all excited for it, I promise. Up first, they're the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Jehosa's Witness. It's Shepard Price.
Hi. It turns out if you just eat citric acid, it's not great.
I assume you weren't just consuming straight citric acid. I assume it was in other things that you were having, right?
So at the recommendation of my therapist, I needed to get some things that will help, hopefully, with my anxiety. And one of them was sour candy, but I've sworn off sugar because I'm trying to lose 60 pounds before October. And so I bought these little packets of pure lemon, which is just like little packets that are just like lemon flavor.
Oh, my God.
And the thing about lemons is that there's a lot of citric acid in them.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of citric acid in the packets. And so if you just eat the packet, yikes.
The only way that could possibly be not awful, I think, is if you did that like at the end of the meal. And like, because I feel like if you did that on an empty stomach, you are asking for trouble. And I think you might be asking for trouble in general. I have no expertise in this field, but it doesn't sound like the most, it just sounds bad. It just sounds like
bad, dude. I think it's like eating like protein powder, like just like doing a scoop of protein powder in your mouth. Because it's like, oh, mix this in with water. I didn't do that.
All right. Well, best of luck to your insides, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Also, I'm just gonna move along because I have no idea what else to say about that. Also with us this evening, he's on Twitter at Mill182, and he is the Second City Hockey, what Johnny Frank is to Bill Murray. It's Mill Savage.
Shay, I recommend the lemon water next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it was like the best version of a lemon head.
I'm sending best wishes to your stomach. That's all I can say because you are a brave person. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And as far as my connection goes, I have nothing else to add except for 5 years ago today, I was at the infamous game where the lawyer played goalie or whatever the
accountants.
Fuck
that guy. Accountants.
Scott Foster.
Accountants,
yeah.
Scott accountant. Foster.
Sorry,
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was just thinking about like 10 minutes ago or before we got together that I think that was the last time everybody looked at the Blackhawks in like the entire hockey world and is like, oh, isn't that a nice story? That's a nice story.
So I didn't realize that was today, but it came up in my like memories feed or whatever.
I think the Blackhawks tweeted about it too.
And It was so funny because once or twice a year, my brother and I would take my mom to a game, and we took her to that one, and she's kind of like, oh, they're subbing the goalie out. Like, what's going on? And I looked at Steve, and I go, who the fuck is 90? Because Colin Delia started that game.
Yeah.
And Corey was out. And I'm like, who the fuck is wearing 90?
I think it was Delia and Forsberg, because I think that was your Crawford was injured a whole bunch. So it was Delia, right, and Anton Forsberg.
It was a Jeff Glass and guys.
Remember, yeah, remember when we thought that year was going to be the bad year?
Yeah, Jeff GLS. So yeah. Anyways, shout out Scott Foster. I'm glad you got to live my dream.
My dream is my dream would be to be a skater, not to be in that having Patrick.
Well, Lennon just to finish out an NHL game and get the dub.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Also with us this evening, she's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR, where she is the Second City Hockey Bull and Wall of Text. It's Betsy.
I was trying to remember when that thing, when Foster happened, I was in a meeting at work and nobody at my office except one person knew anything about hockey, and it's only because he was from Buffalo. And my manager turned to me and was like, did you hear that thing about like a regular person going into goal in an NHL game?
A regular person.
And I was like, happened to my team, and also not that uncommon, or it's regular enough. And then she tried to tell the story and then she's told it wrong. And I remember being like, please be quiet for a second. I have to tell the story accurately.
Let the pros do this. Let the pros have. They brought a normie into the net. It's great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was funny because literally whatever that story was, it went outside of the hockey world. Cause again, we're talking about Atlanta, Georgia, in an office, like corporate office, and a woman I don't think ever listens, like does anything sports related. Like she's me, but minus hockey. She hates all sports.
Well, it's a very well-rounded character that she must have. She hates them all equally.
I assume so.
Yeah. So real quick, before we get into the discussion part of the program this evening, if you visited the Second City Hockey website on Wednesday, you may have seen a post detailing where Second City Hockey is headed next. I'm not going to go through the whole thing here because it's still up at the website. It's going to be pinned to the top for a while. As of Thursday night, we won't be posting at secondcityhockey.com. We'll be posting let me dial this back a second. The Chorus platform that we use to publish secondcityhockey.com right now is under the Vox Media thing. That's ending Thursday night. So starting Friday, we will be posting at our new website under the Ghost platform. There's a new URL to follow for now. That it's second-city-hockey.ghost.io. Eventually, we're thinking like a week or two, roughly, our domain will go back to secondcityhockey.com, and the new website at the Ghost platform will be all under this original banner. But I would go to the website, secondcityhockey.com, read through that article to let you know. We're going to have a little bit of a transition period while this miserable season is having its final stretches played out. But we're all excited about it, and we're going to have some fancy new stuff at the website. We've got some new logos that I cannot wait to reveal to the public because Betsy's one of her contacts, coworkers, I don't know. But she shout out to Amber. She's been doing a great job. I'm so excited to show everyone these logos that we're going to have. And then we're going to do merch. We're going to do – I'm very excited after seeing the logo. We're going to have a lot of fun. So stay tuned to all of that. But in the meantime, coming back to the present day, obviously last week's episode we talked a lot about the Blackhawks and the Pride Night jersey situation. There's not really much else to say other than what we already said last week. The only really real development that's come out in the day since is that the NHL deputy commissioner said they have no knowledge of any reason why Russian players should be worried about backlash against backlash from their home country if they participate in Pride Nights. So it seemed to be a direction, like maybe not a direct shot at the Blackhawks, but it certainly seemed to call into question all these things that they're citing. Team CEO Danny Wirtz was asked for I think Mark Lazarus from The Athletic asked to talk to him at the game Sunday night. Danny declined. So we got nothing from the organization, which is really a great sign. And really quickly, just want to throw it around the room. If anybody had any other final thoughts to add, and then we can put this, I won't say put it to bed, but it just, I guess, move on. Shay, did you have any other things to add?
Yeah, first off, let me just say I look forward to getting my Second City Hockey merch and being a fan of the site.
Oh, I, I'm going to waste all my money on merch. It's going to be bad.
And then second, wow, Danny Wirtz is a coward. I already took the knives out for him.
You're not the first person to express that sentiment.
Shay, you are correct in your analysis.
Golden Knights fan. That man is a coward, and he can come fight me. Come down to Texas. I'll fight you. I will physically fight you. Let's go.
Shay, you are correct.
We started with Shay challenging the Blackhawks CEO to a fight. We're off to a roaring start. I love this.
Shay is correct, and I just want to throw something out there that we've all been saying for years, although it was originally about Rocky. A Wirtz is a Wirtz.
There is that element to it for sure, Mill. I think my the big picture concern that I now have, kind of in a similar vein with what you said, Mill, is just that because Danny Wirtz, I guess, kind of hires the GM, and then the GM's in charge of this whole rebuild thing that's going on. And I'm not ready to fully say I'm there, but I now have it's raised my concern about how this overall process is going to go on the hockey side of things, because it seems like they're making the same kinds of mistakes on the business side of things. So why would the hockey side of things change if the other side has it?
I also need to add this. I physically hate saying this. It literally kills me.
Uh-oh.
They've made Jerry Reinsdorf the best owner in Chicago. Oh, you know I'm right.
Oh, man.
Disagree.
You know what? I would actually say the McCaskey family might be better. They're not good, but I don't think they are. They're not cheap. They're just bad at their job, I think.
They're incompetent.
They're at least going to have the Bears land up in Arlington Heights. So
here's the thing.
Whoever owns the Fire, I think, is the best.
You seen the Fire's record the last 15
years?
Does
not matter.
The Chicago Red Stars have a large group of owners. So maybe it's them or the Sky.
I have two merchandise things I want to throw out, and then I'll shut up, if that's okay, before we get into this podcast.
Well, I mean, we're already kind of into it, but go ahead.
Number one, I have a screenshot of the store from the 5 years ago, the night of the Scott Foster game. And the jerseys on the wall 5 years ago were Sharp, Saad, Taves, Crawford, Keith, and Seabrook. And Duclair.
Oh, Anthony Duclair.
Yeah, if that tells you how far we've
come. I hope everybody in the Anthony Duclair bandwagon got their jersey while they still could.
The second thing is, when I finally become in charge of our merchandise for the site, it will all be punk rock and wrestling rips and a graphic of Dave as the coach who threw the bench onto the ice.
I mean, we're going to have a meeting away from the podcast.
There was a guy, it might've been in the '70s or '80s. And he, when the bench was just a big slab of wood, he picked it up and threw it onto the ice.
Patrick Waugh was a coach in the '70s.
Yeah, right.
No, but that was when he broke the glass. That was funny.
That was good.
I liked him as a goalie, but as a coach, he was just more entertaining. He should have been in pro wrestling.
Yeah. Bessie, did you have anything else you want to add to steer this back on course? Or
please, Bessie, please.
I was just gonna say, I said everything I pretty much said before. It's disappointing. It is what it is. I wish the message around Pride was more about the cool stuff that teams still did and not about all of this bullshit teams are doing. That it wasn't overshadowing that, but yeah.
I think there is, I don't remember if it was like a formal thing that Gary Bettman said, or if it was just a paraphrase or what, but I thought there was I mentioned on Twitter today that the NHL is going to reassess basically how they handle those nights, because it has become, as you said, Betsy, like it's become the focus of the event has taken away, is no longer on what the night is supposed to be about. It's about the jerseys, which is it's completely lost its way. So we'll see where it goes from here. I don't know where it goes from here. I guess we'll find out next season, which will, We got plenty of time before then.
Yep.
So circling away, I guess back to more on ice related things. One of the big things we wanted to talk about tonight is the news. It came out, I believe it was during Sunday's game, that Jonathan Toews is back on the ice and skating. And it seems like he is fairly determined to get on the ice before the season ends, perhaps with the knowledge in his head somewhere that he is either like his Blackhawks career is about to be over or his entire hockey career is about to be over. He spoke for 15 minutes and he remained non-committal after that morning skate. And he answered a lot of questions, but he didn't really say like if he's going to retire, if he's going to go somewhere else, if he's staying here, he's going to try and resign. He remained non-committal as he has for pretty much his entire process. But there was also seemed to be some acknowledgement of like the potential writing on the wall here. So I guess I don't really have any specific thoughts to start with on that. So I'm going to swing it over to Shay. We're going to get rolling on the Jonathan Toews topic and see where it takes us.
Sorry, you're catching me while I'm still writing the preview for tomorrow's game.
I look forward to reading it.
What's the direct question?
Well, just what was your reaction when you saw the Jonathan Toews news that he's back skating and might get back on the ice before the season ends?
I'm interested in that because long COVID is which is what he's been struggling with. It's called the novel coronavirus for a reason, because it's new.
It's called COVID-19 because it was found in 2019. Yeah.
Yes. And so we don't really know what the long-term impacts are. It's interesting to see him try and come back again, because he's come back now once already, after a full year out. And it's also interesting because what's really the motivation? I mean, there's nothing to play for the Blackhawks anymore, except losses. They need losing to catch back up with Columbus.
Shay, I think the answer is just
hyper competitive drive that drives all NHL players.
Yeah, it's just he does not have the. Obviously, he's a much different person than you and I or anybody in this room is, just because by nature of he made it to the NHL, first of all, and then like the career he had, he's in like the 0.001% and maybe a few more zeros with what he has accomplished. And there is an internal drive there, like just to be on the ice, to be playing. And I think completely impervious to any outside forces, even at like the start of the season everybody knew like the Blackhawks, everybody looked at the Blackhawks roster and said, this team is going to suck. And the quotes that they were giving to the media before the season was, you know, we feel like we can surprise some people. That's how they think.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we're proven wrong, but that is how they think. And I feel like they genuinely think like that.
I think Toews might also like him coming back is definitely a good thing, because the kids do need tutoring. And Phil Kurashev shouldn't be the first line center.
Well, he's not anymore.
but he's Dunzo. Getting Toews back on the ice would be good, but it also I think helps prove that Toews is like at the beginning of the season, Toews was one of the best players for the Blackhawks easily, and was like, yeah, that this guy could be traded for something of value to a contending team to use as a depth center. I think he wants to get back on the ice and prove that. That in free agency, he's still somebody who could be looked at as a depth center for a contending team.
Betsy, what about you?
I think it'll be interesting to see what he does in the summer. I think it's fun for him and good for him to see him at least get back out on the ice for this season closed. But really, it's all about what's going to happen in the summer. Yeah. I want whatever is best for his health. It would be great if he could continue his career, because I know how much a lot of these guys just really want to stay and they want to play. And it sucks that his career could get cut short because of something that he can't control even a little bit, you know, like anytime that a hockey player or sports professional, their career is cut down by something that is not related to their sport, like an accident in their sport or just wear and tear on their body. That kind of stuff is just extra heartbreaking a little bit. I'm sure he'll cry himself to sleep in all his millions. He'll be fine.
It's like for like the competitive soul within him. Like I'm sure it sucks that he is something that he didn't have any control over is having this much of an effect on him.
Yeah, and especially since, you know, the last couple of last few years, he hadn't been playing well going into COVID kind of stuff. Like, it wasn't like his best. And there's all this like dissing of him. It's the same thing that happened to Seabrook. You know, people were like annoyed at his contract that they started being like super negative about him and just completely dismissing or ignoring all the contributions that he made. And there was a really interesting Twitter thread that went around that was literally like, will Taves be a first round, a first ballot Hall of Fame nominee? And I was like, most of the replies are yes. And then there were a few people that were like, well, he hasn't been a top 50 center for like 5 years. Why would he be, you know, why would that happen? And then there was a laughable, well, if he gets in, then Zetterberg should. And it's like, sir, that's laughable. You know, and it's, I bet that he really wanted to come back and like have one last hurrah before. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work out that way this season. So it'll be good to see him if he can get back on the ice. I'm excited for him for that. But really what's more interesting is what's going to happen later.
Yeah. And I do feel like if it becomes a, if there's some advance notice that he's going to play in one of the games coming up before the season ends, I feel like I will like almost like a sense of obligation. Like I need to go see that game. Just like on principle of like, I've been like watching him for so long. And if this, like any of these games could be the end, like I went to the Hawks game against the Senators, which I believe ended up being Patrick Kane's final home game. And which was totally by accident. And now I feel like if it comes that Taves could play his final home game, or even if it's like the regular season finale against the Flyers, like I feel like I'm going to need to be in the building just to like be there for the standing ovation at the end that I'm sure he'll get, because I had a different thought 2 or 3 months ago. Now that Kane's been traded, like it's real hard to envision any situation where Taves is on the team next season.
However, I'd like to add an asterisk to that. After the Rangers get shit on in the playoffs, Kane might come back.
Well, yeah, that's...
I'm not saying he should come back. I'm just saying he could. He might.
Yeah, I will happily entertain that discussion in the summer. I think a lot of it hinges on what happens on the draft lottery May 8th, frankly. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But yeah, I don't know if you had any other thoughts on the Taves situation.
I'd like to just give my quick 2 cents on Taves, because
it's not going to be quick. I know you.
Well, no, look, I've been really lucky and privileged that I got to watch his entire career from the beginning.
Yeah.
And you guys know me. I'm the, you know, X's and O's guys or whatever. But like the fact is, Jonathan Taves had a lot of injuries that people don't talk about prior to his stuff recently. And the way he was able to play, he was on par to win the Calder and got hurt, and Kane ended up getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Like people don't realize that. Like he was, I'm not saying he's better than Kane, but I'm saying he was points wise, he was right there. And when Q came in, he decided, hey, this guy's better two-way. We're going to switch it up. He hurt his back, and they ended up still winning that first final, and he was only 22. Taves had all the talent in the world, and that's the thing that people try to shit on, is the injuries really fucked with him. And despite that, he still accomplished all he did. So I think that – I'm not saying he's Marian Hossa. I'm not saying he's Patrick Kane or Duncan Keith, but still, like – To not act like he's going to get into the Hall of Fame in his first ballot, it's like, who's he going to be up against that he won't? You know, that's the question.
Yeah.
Not him as an individual.
I want to come back to that first ballot Hall of Fame discussion in a second here, but I think just the main thought on Taves was, you know, I think there were a lot of other guys that were more, like, Kane was always more in front of the cameras because of his, you know, Showtime nickname and all that. And there was a lot, like Marian Hossa was like a cult hero among the fan base for everybody, though, and like not just like the small corner of the like a weird small segment of the fan base. Everybody loved Marian Hossa. Like, you know, Patrick Sharp was always on camera. Taves always kind of felt like a little bit like the background guy, I think, sometimes, because of his demeanor. But he also wore the C for the best era in the history of the franchise. Well, so like.
I, also 2011-2012, Taves was on pace to have a fucking MVP season, and he got hurt. And Kane played like shit in that year. So, like, people don't remember that type of stuff.
People forget that at the time when they made Crosby captain of Team Canada, Crosby called Taves to make sure, like, that it was okay, because everybody in the game had that debate of who's the better
captain. That's right.
Obviously, Crosby's the better player, but who's the better leader?
Right.
So.
Right. No, yeah, Betsy, that's a great point.
Yeah, that was, I remember like the Taves Crosby debate and in terms of like hockey skill, like Crosby was always clearly the better player. And I think Crosby's like immortal status this season has proven that even more. But in terms of like the intangibles behind the scenes leadership and all that, like I don't know if they're like it is an incredibly short list of people who were like more fitting to be in the captain role than Jonathan Taves.
And a lot of times Taves, he had the flashy goals and whatever, but he did a lot of dirty work. Like, he used to never lose a board battle. He played on the penalty kill and the power play.
It felt like the prototypical Jonathan Taves highlight was a board battle in the offensive zone behind the net. He won the board battle and he'd bring out the puck and he'd either stuff it home himself or his teammate would finish it on the rebound.
And like, you could tell clearly his idols were Sakic and Yzerman. You could tell.
Yeah. And I think the, one of my favorite Taves moments there was a handful of times where he just got that look in his eye and it's like, oh, he's about to score a goal and it doesn't matter who gets in his way. The one against Vancouver in the 2011 playoffs always comes to mind, that forced overtime that year. But there's a lot of others.
I have a good off air story about that one.
Oh boy. I can't wait. But yeah, I don't want to like write the entire eulogy yet because he's still on the team and still has more games to play, even though I'm still pissed off that the Hawks had like a pregame hype video and they completely cut Taves out of it or something. I forget what they did or what or how they did it, but I remember it was right after the Kane trade. They like had a brand new hype video and, Taves like was not there at all, and I'm like,
who's still the active captain? By the way,
even if he was hurt, he's still the captain. You can still put him on the goddamn hype video. Like, I'm getting retroactively annoyed. I guess now I'll have to go back to a game and see if he's on the hype video pregame or if he's like in the historical section or the active player section. So
when's the last home game?
April 13th, I think. All right. Well, I have my people get in touch with your people. But it's against the Flyers. I know that it is.
Oh, God damn. That's going to be horrible.
That would be the pity bowl. Yeah. Thursday, April 13th at the United Center. Get your tickets now. I'm sure they're going to be cheap. But what we're going to do in the meantime is we're going to take a quick time out. We're going to catch our breaths and we're going to come back and talk about some more stuff. So come on back for all of that.
That was a great keep by BX, as you pointed out, Pat. Then he slid over to the opposite side, received the puck, but couldn't handle it, went out over the blue line.
Smith to Kane, he drives in. He'll never let it go, dropped it back, keep a shot. Get it out of the glove, all Luongo. And the rebound of Burrows, a long pass. Bounce loose to Duncan Keith. 5 minutes remaining in the fourth period. Hossa, able to gain the line. Hossa hanging on. Fights toward the middle. Drops it back. Chalmerson's long shot. Tip. Hold on. It's everyone. Smith. Hawks win. Ben Smith. 22 years old. Has sent this to the seventh game. Hawks win in overtime.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. As promised before the break, and I think I mentioned this a couple of times when it was mentioned by, I think, Betsy and Mill both touched on it briefly, but this idea of the Jonathan Taves first ballot Hall of Famer, like, there was a Twitter thread on it. It was Nick Alberga, who's a media person in Canada. He's up in Toronto somewhere, so I feel like every media person I find that's in Toronto has like 20,000 followers. That's a hockey media person, because The Toronto media scene must be just flourishing because it seems like everybody has jobs. So maybe that's the catch. If you want to be a hockey media person, go to Toronto. But anyway, the question was whether or not Taves is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I found the quote of someone who said, if Taves is a first ballot Hall of Famer, then Zetterberg should have his number retired by the league, which the only way I would listen to that argument is if you start talking about Zetterberg's beard should be retired by the rest of the league somehow, because his beard top five of the history of the NHL. But I think the answer I've landed on this, like, I feel like Taves, because, you know, like as Mill mentioned, like all the injuries and everything, his body did wear down in the back half of the 2010s. The numbers started to tail off a little bit. But I think regardless of, as long as he didn't completely fall off a cliff, which I don't think he did, he's just going to be first ballot Hall of Famer on principle, just because he was the captain of the best era of probably the best run of any team in the salary cap era so far. So I don't see how he's not. And I'm assuming the three of you have no objections to that.
I think our silence speaks.
Yeah. I was like all in favor, all opposed.
No, yeah, I have no objections, and I'm going to wait, like you said, for the eulogy. I'm not going to get into all the accomplishments or whatever. But I do want to throw one thing out there that's interesting, since he said he's going to play now.
He hopes he's going to play now. We'll see.
Right. Okay. He kind of Makita'd it because he outlasted Kane as a member of the team. Now, Kane might have played more games because of Taves' injuries. But it's kind of interesting because if he stays the rest of the year and just says, you know, he could retire or go somewhere else, but he, you know, it's like he, if he retires, he finished the Blackhawk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
And the captain for every year except his rookie year where he wore an A in December.
Yeah.
Will he be technically the only core member to do that? Because every other one had their contracts traded away and or didn't get Crawford didn't get re-signed.
I'll say Crawford
was traded.
Crawford never played with the Devils though. Like, he got to training camp and said, nah, I'm good, and hung it up.
But to Betsy's point, like,
close enough though. I see what you're saying, Betsy.
If you kind of take Crawford's like a weird one, but yeah, Crawford, Keith went to the Oilers, Seabrook took his contract.
Both had their contracts.
Right.
Yeah.
Sharp came back, but he did get traded away.
Yeah. No, so, Taves would be the only, Blackhawks lifer.
Yeah.
All had phantom retirements. Kind of serves the fucking organization right, not the fans, but the organization. Okay.
I think you can call Corey Crawford a lifer because he never actually played a game for New Jersey.
That's
well, I agree, and I don't think he would have signed there if the Hawks would have actually done him his due diligence and signed him.
It didn't seem like he wanted to go, but the Hawks let him go anyway.
I was about to buy the fucking Crawford jersey.
I think if it shows up on your Wikipedia page, it's not listed under his wiki.
Because he didn't do anything. Like, he never,
right.
He signed.
I don't even think he played a preseason game.
Like, he might have not even got paid. No, he didn't. He because you know what? I'm just going to say, I remember this. I remember on my TV watching it, Taves came out and fucking went off on the organization for not communicating all the trades. Because remember, they traded Saad too. Yeah. So that's when they traded him to Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Was that the second, or that was the third time they traded? Had a trade involving Brandon Saad.
It was right after.
The second time they traded him away, third trade involving him.
Yeah.
Because that was right after they beat the Oilers in the fake playoffs and then got their ass beat by Vegas. But yeah. Corey got him one.
Yeah. And that was like the Corey Crawford, like, swan song, I guess, as much as we had. Taves is number five all-time in games played. Keith said 1192. Kane was at 1161. Seabrook is at 1114. Taves is in fifth at 1060, but he passed Bobby Hall this season, so that's good. I think there would be something if Taves is able to come back.
Day.
Yeah, if Taves is able to come back this season, and I don't know where he's at, if there was some sort of, like, acknowledgement from him that this is it, like, he's going to hang up his skates at the end of the season,
And to have that last game be it, to have that like kind of cathartic, like this is the end moment, that would actually, I think that would be kind of, it would be nice. I don't think nice is a word for it, because I don't, I'm still kind of, part of me feels like I'm in denial that we're at this point with all of this. But it would be something. It would be maybe neat is a better word for it.
I feel like it's not going to happen though.
No, I don't.
I think Kane and Taves both went into this season not wanting to go anywhere. And that's part of the reason that Kane dragged his feet so much at the end is that they really didn't want to go anywhere. And that sucks for them that they had to go. And it's probably maybe better for the team. We've had that discussion before, but I think he'll take all summer to decide. I think it'll be a hard decision.
He won't sign until like September. And then,
right, and then, I think to Betsy's point, like Kane probably didn't want to leave. He probably just said playing with Panarin and maybe and making the playoffs is better than staying here.
I think it's because they kept trading. Like, I mean, they had that story that came out with Kane where they essentially said that the organization was pretty much pushing him out. Like, the last straw was like Domi getting traded because they just keep trading away all his friends. Like, not a single player that he, if Kane mentioned them as a line mate.
Yeah. And I can tell you for a fact, like, the organization leaks bullshit to get people's opinions. Like when they put out that Tavo had bad work ethic, that was bullshit.
I don't think they leaked the whole Kane got pushed out, because that turned people against, like,
I think like them wanting to trade him it was a feeler. I think
that
for the fans,
I don't think that's a story we're going to get until like 3 or 4 years down the road, if we get it at all.
I just know that if they did, they did a bet. They shouldn't have leaked it.
But it, I will say, like, I feel like we all might be in agreement that if, at least like from this perspective, it feels like they have never wanted Taves and Kane around. I thought Taves and Kane were going to strong arm their way and not leave town because they just didn't want to leave.
I'll say this GM now, he's not a fan and wasn't around. He has no attachment to 19 or 88.
But
he wasn't in charge.
No, but he's been around the organization. He's been in the, like,
that doesn't matter that he didn't sign them, is what I'm saying. They're not his guy.
I think to Mills' point, I think he may not have as close of a, like, a working relationship with those two as other people who have been in the organization for a decade might have.
But what I meant by that is this: the fans have an attachment to them, and the organization, the guys who sign them, draft them, pay them, have a due diligence. Yeah. That's the difference.
Well, yeah, it's not necessarily wrong that they're trying to run them out of town. It's just a bad look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying this guy wasn't there, but I'm saying, like, he doesn't owe them anything in his eyes.
No, I don't think, my whole thing was, I don't think the organization owes them, and I don't think the players owe them. There was a lot of, like, heat that some people, like, threw at Kane because he, like, strong-armed the team into going to the Rangers and getting such a shitty return. And it's like, well, and they're like, he owes the organization to, like, help. And it's like, he doesn't owe you shit. He brought three cups to this city. Like,
yeah, he held up his end of the bargain. Well,
I would call it a wash, because the organization got him out of a lot of trouble multiple times.
Well,
that's off-ice stuff. We're talking about... And, like, I think any team would have gone to bat for like that. I don't think the Blackhawks were.
I'm not even talking about 15. I'm talking about the multiple ones even before.
I think teams would cover up anything for a star player, and all of them would do it.
Especially one that nobody. That they happened. We were talking about Taves as a first ballot Hall of Famer. We're not talking about Kane. That's undoubtedly happening.
No, but I want to. This will be a different podcast, but I'm talking about 10, 11, 11, 12. Different time.
Yeah, again, like as Betsy said, any team would cover that up.
I think any, not even any hockey team, any professional sports franchise, period.
I'm not saying they wouldn't cover it up, but at that time, not first ballot Hall of Fame and not accomplished.
Well, yeah, but
first overall selection.
But he was also like, there's like best off it. Like, there was the first time in forever that the team had what was considered a good team. Even in 11 and 12, they had great teams. They just didn't perform in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They didn't have a great team in 11.
Well,
they
had to wait for the Wild to beat Dallas in the last game of the year to make the playoffs.
All I'm saying is that Kane and Taves were the faces of this organization. I'm with you on that. They were not going to allow that to taint that image.
With you on that. My point is, though, they got him out of trouble more than once, is all I'm saying.
That's fine.
But as you just stated, the people who are in charge now are not the people that did that, unless you count the Wurtzes, which, I mean, I don't think that they care.
Betsy, it's an interesting point. Like, how much do they care, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird, like, relationship that these people have, because these are employees and employers. But, like, Bowman was really close to the Canes. Like, the Bowman family is close to the Canes.
Kane lived with them for
it. Yes, and they're all from Buffalo and all that, like, you know.
But the old man died their rookie year. So it's like Rocky has to know them pretty well.
Oh, of course. These people grew up. I mean, they as much as you can know a fucking billionaire or whatever, Rocky is compared. But I don't know. I think that there was nothing any organization, if that had happened in Tampa and it had been Stamkos, they would have covered it up. If it had been Crosby, they would have covered it up. If it had been anybody who was the face of a franchise and something really shitty happened, they were going to like back their player.
That's part of their job.
I think it would have happened back then. Maybe less so now. I think there's too much scrutiny right now, which is a good thing. It needs to change. I just don't think it would have happened back then.
I don't know. I just, there's part of me that's kind of glad this is all over, because there's still like the fact that like, a decade later, there's still that like lingering stuff from everything that's happened over the last 10, 15 years that came out a few years ago or that has been known for years. So there's like this element of like, finally, like we can just take all this and wrap it up and put it in a box.
It's a new era
here and just leave it over there. And not have to deal with that. Like, you can start with a clean slate. Like, you know, there's like, if you look at the on ice roster by next season, like there's no reason to have any like lingering hate for any of these players. Like,
there are a few concerns I have, but hopefully,
yeah, maybe. Well, let's, I don't
think for the, nothing
I,
for the,
I don't even want to, it's just, it's nice to have like a clean slate. Nothing like hangover.
Look, I actually don't have like that lingering hate. The only reason I was bringing those things up was in the context of who owes who what.
And from a purely on ice perspective, bringing in the money, bringing in the cups, bringing in the prestige, bringing like the fact that Chicago, like the Blackhawks didn't do anything, you know, like they brought a cup that one time, 50 years, what, 49 years, and then brought two more. Like, that's every one of those guys in the core.
There's obviously a lot of other people who were part of it, but Taves and Kane are the reason people give a shit about hockey in Chicago now.
I'm with you guys on that. I've just meant, you know, they certainly did a lot for him that people don't know about.
Yeah, but that's,
we agree, no, but that's not what, the whole point is that the Blackhawks are bad at PR, is my point, that fans do not, like, the general fan doesn't know that. Doesn't know a bunch of this stuff. Doesn't know all
this
stuff.
Nor do they care.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you have them coming, they're, like, testing the waters maybe with this whole, like, well, we wanted him to go, and he didn't want to, and that's why he made this shitty return, and trying to shift the blame to Kane. And the reaction is, well, no, you should have just, you should have locked that all up. It's why when that episode dropped,
I was just about to ask if any of you had watched that.
It was good of them to put it out, because they showed a good conversation. They had like a phone call and all this other stuff. It was a much nicer version of whatever. So hopefully that tempers it, because nobody needs to be angry at the current front office right now, because we're trying to support them and hope them the best.
Hope to God that
I think we talked about this on a podcast not too long ago, but like when you look at a guy like Kane, who's clearly a first ballot Hall of Famer, very successful, first pick overall, and to compare him to anybody who's even close to that, Gretzky or anybody else who's gotten traded, you're never going to get fucking equal value.
Betsy's been, that's been Betsy's drum that she's been all over for like
no, but
this entire season.
I mean, look at what the fuck did the Oilers get for Wayne Gretzky? A bag of fucking pucks? Like, come on.
Yeah, and then they won the cup the season after they traded him, if I remember correctly.
That's 90, so like maybe 2 years after. Because he went to the Kings in 88, 87, 88. But yeah, but they had fucking everybody else there. Jari Kurri still and Mark Messier and whoever.
What were you going to say, Betsy?
I was going to say the people that would like, the minute, like I kept just banging that drum constantly in the comments, and then they'd be like, no, you're delusional. And I was like, I am looking at historical facts. I do not think that, I think we're going to get history repeating itself. And then when it happened, they were like, how could this happen? We're so surprised. And I was like, how are you surprised?
Well, to Betsy, to your point, this guy made them a lot of money and brought them a lot of shit, good shit. And they're like, hey, we're not going to make you suffer just because we can't get a first rounder out of New York or whatever the fuck.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think both Kane and however you want to say, he brought a lot of money and a lot of what, you know, a lot of prestige and all this other stuff on ice to the Blackhawks. He helped with that. And he argued for his no movement clause, and that was his right to do. And he enforced it. He used it like he should, just like everybody who has it. Nobody in their right mind, if your job tried to fire you or trade you to another company and you had the right to say, absolutely not, you would take that. I want my money. I want to stay where I'm staying or whatever.
Yeah. I have 1,000% in favor of athletes who get a no movement clause, use it to the fullest extent of its powers. Absolutely. Yeah, entirely. Because it is the extremely rare case where the player has any sort of leverage in any of these negotiations, because they usually have none. And it's usually the billionaire owners who have all of the leverage. So
like, would we have all liked the Blackhawks to get a better return for a player that was like that, like still good, he's not having a great season, doing better with the Rangers now, probably because they have better players.
Do you think?
I think we all know we would have liked a better return. Was it a surprising return? No. It should not have been a surprise to anyone.
That's how this works. And I don't think there was any, like, I as long as they got like something in return for Kane, like I was resigned, mainly because I had heard Betsy say it so many times on this podcast that I was like resigned to the fact that like, it's not going to be a good trade. It's always underwhelming. But the on the other side of that coin, what I will say is to remember this in like 4 to 5 years, if the Hawks are good again, that when teams trade away really good players, it always feels like the return is underwhelming. And not even just like the, you know, aging veteran running out the clock in his career who's still really good. I feel like some of the just random blockbuster trades that happened in the NHL, you look at what went one way for the play for the star player, and it's like, that ain't shit. The Taylor Hall trade, I feel like, is one that comes to mind here. But it's just, it feels like if the Hawks are going to have roughly 936 blue line prospects for the next 4 to 5 years, there's only 6 spots at the NHL level. 7 if you want to throw in the swing defenseman, sure. They could start, like, if they get to a point in a few seasons where they need to start, where they're really looking to add talent, get some of the, like, throw in some picks and prospects and get, I don't know, whoever's the guy is going to be. Get a, I don't know, maybe Miro Heiskanen will be available or something at that point, or Kale McCarr, why not? Let's get up there while we can. All right. Well, I have this took a significant turn away from where I thought the discussion was going to go, but I don't know how we ended up here, but here we are once again, which is, I think, could just be the tagline for this show at this point. Do you have any other hockey thoughts? Like, Amila, I know you had something you'd mentioned in our pre-show. I think we're going to put a pin in that and save it for next week or maybe the week after that.
I think it would be a good thing to talk about down the line.
Okay.
We still have some games left.
Yeah. Kind of.
Unfortunately.
While we are here, I just wanted to quickly, like, there's mainly 3 guys to watch right now. Well, Alex Vlasic is up. We'll see. That seems like it's more because of injuries, and if we'll see how long he stays up. But with him and Wyatt Kaiser and Lucas Reichel, like, there's 3 young guys who could be here for the long haul who really like are kind of like worth watching for a change. Because I think I've officially given up on the Ian Mitchell thing. It doesn't seem like they have any use for him, and I'll be stunned.
I feel like he wants the fuck out of here.
At this point, he probably does.
Do you guys watch? So the last game, the only time that I cared was on the penalty kill because Wyatt Kaiser and Vlasic were practically the top pair. Like they traded off with Jones and they were great. Yeah. Like it was weird because, you know, the Stars actually have a really good power play and they did a great job in their roles. And I was actually very excited. I know it's a very small, it's one game sample, but that's very cool to see. And they had the highest ice time behind Seth Jones. And I know there's nobody else playing, but like Murphy didn't play and stuff like that, like didn't get as many minutes. So that was cool to see. I hope we see more of that down, like just down the end of the season. That would be awesome. It's what we've been asking for all season.
Yeah. It's something to watch. It's literally something to, like something entertaining about the potential long or something that could be around in 3 or 4 seasons. Not a guy who's going to be traded before then or walk in free agency, whatever. And the other one is, Lucas Reichel, just there's all these like constant little flashes of his speed, his skill, and it's just like, for the love of God, get him some line mates by next season. I you know, if it's Bedard or Fantilli or whoever, just give him some other players who can complement what he does, and I think he'll be fun to watch for a while. I've been trying to like kind of like, not in a specific like this is like skill set type of thing, but more of like role, like try and take players now and project or compare them with players of Blackhawks of the prior dynasty. And I feel like Lucas Reichel is going to be like a kind of a Patrick Sharp type where he's in the top 6 for sure. Probably pretty good on the first line. If he's on the second line, it's really good because that means your top line's even better. And then I've got, as I think we've talked before, I've got Phil Kurashev in the Christopher Stieg role. Those are the two I've sorted out so far. That's about it. And if you think of, like, you compare how many guys the Hawks had on those really good teams from back in the day, and that maybe they have the guy to fill in for Patrick Sharp and maybe the guy to fill in for Christopher Stieg, and so far, that's about it.
Hey, Sharp showed up pretty early in that core group.
Yeah. So
thank you, Matt Ellison.
So those are my final Blackhawks thoughts. Do we have any other Blackhawks thoughts? Shay, you've been awfully quiet. I don't know if you were just generally as bored of this team as we are at times.
Yeah.
Yes, you are. Okay.
It's time for food.
It is time for food. Well, we already talked about Shay's potentially inflammatory stomach at this point, I guess. But you mentioned the food take in our pre-show meeting, and I forgot it already. So please. Let it go.
Okay. Those who eat spicy candy, including hot tamales and fireballs and things like that, are insane. People who do it for pleasure and for joy are insane. Do it because, again, therapist recommended to take away from my anxiety. It's one of the most painful experiences I've ever had with a fireball, and it's not like the fucking whiskey. And,
okay, yeah, because you said fireball, and I
was no, it's a candy. Okay, it's a hot candy. It's a hot, I know what you're talking about. Hot little red ball. And it felt like how I imagine, as a person who has their ears pierced, how I imagine getting your tongue pierced feels like.
Did you ever have a warhead?
Yes. How it does feels it... like? I'd imagine it's that, but spicy.
Do you eat spicy food? Sour.
Yes, I love spicy food.
You don't like the candy? Like, I'm just asking because I'm curious about the...
It physically, like, it feels like there's a molten ball. Like, you know how, like iron balls, if you get them hot enough, they sort of glow this orange red?
Yeah.
It felt like you put that on your tongue.
See, I never got, like, that sensation from those candies. I just don't particularly like how they taste because they taste like fireball, that cinnamon... kind of thing going on.
I don't mind the fake cinnamon, but it's like the fact that like you get through a layer and then all of a sudden there's that bout of
the
pain.
The hot, again. It's like burning. Yeah, I don't know.
I think kind of like whatever. Try Jolly Ranchers hotties because those are good.
No, This is the thought I keep coming back to. If you're going to offer me candy and it's going to do that to me, that is not fucking candy. Candy is supposed to be a pleasant experience all around.
Yeah, if we're going to do that, we're going out for tacos.
Yeah, if I watch, this isn't candy to me. This is just.
Some people really like the spice sweet combination, which, like I said, I like Jolly Ranchers hotties. If you've ever had those, they're much milder than a, they have a good balance between the spice and the sweet. It's like the people who like spice cakes, you know, like the ones that are pretty hot, but are also a cake that is sweet. When we were talking about donuts, and I mentioned that there was a ghost pepper donut at the Sublime Donuts in Atlanta. It used to be like, they don't make them anymore, but they had them running for a little while. People loved those. Because people like that mix. I don't like the really spicy ones. I'm not all about that, but there are plenty of spicy candy that's like a little bit below what Shay is describing.
I don't know. I love spicy food, but like, I like it savory.
I can understand that. I've had plenty of spicy desserts that I've liked. That I have a sandwich just the right amount. And I don't like spicy food that much. Like I'm one of those people that goes into an Indian restaurant and is like, okay, I'm very white. What is your level? And my best friend.
Well, I also too introduce myself like that, but then I'm like, please show me your ways.
Well, yeah, I would describe myself as painfully Caucasian when it comes to this topic. So
my best friend is Indian, and when her mom makes food, she makes a separate batch for me.
There you go.
Because she's awesome like that. And I'm always like, thank you, Sue. This is a great Sudesh. But I can, like, it depends on which candy you're talking about. The one Shay's talking about, no, I would never. That's dumpster fire to me, literally. But again, there are plenty of them. There are other ones, like, I want to say Skittles does one, and like Starburst, the ones that are normal candies first and then add spice to them versus ones that are like specifically designed to be a spice candy, like Warheads or something. Those are terrible. The other ones are fine. Sour Patch does them too.
I'm kind of in Dave's boat where it's like, if I want candy, like I want candy.
Yeah. Like sweet. It's sweet. Like I can even handle like a little bit of sourness to it. Like the Warheads I mentioned, like I can deal with Warheads.
I feel like sour can be part of the candy experience, though.
I dislike sour candy.
Well, that's okay, but it's still, it's like a part of, like, it's a kind of candy that makes sense.
I think spice makes more sense to me in a candy than sour, but
I mean, if I had to pick, I would eliminate spicy and sour as candy flavors, and I would settle on sweet because, again, candy's supposed to be a treat.
Candy.
It's candy. That's like, yeah, I don't know what the Webster's definition is for candy, but it sure as hell isn't a molten ball of lava on your tongue.
It sure as hell isn't suffering.
My ranking is sweet, spicy, sour. Will be my way to go. Obviously, sweet is way above the rest of them, but sweet, spicy, sour.
But I feel like a lot of the sour ones turn sweet.
A lot of the spicy ones.
First they're sour, then they're sweet. Sorry.
I guess this is what I'm saying is
Sour Patch is the same way with their spicy ones. Spicy ones are spicy at first and then they get sweeter.
I guess what I'm saying is my taste buds in my brain, so it's just me. bitter to sour makes more sense than like spicy. And I think it's because I like spicy food that's like a meal.
Yeah, I can get that.
And then like if I like a fucking, you know, like lemon, lime flavored stuff, it usually has sugar in it.
Yeah. I understand. Going back to Betsy's point though, there are plenty of desserts. I mean, I live in San Antonio, so take this with a grain of salt that I'm surrounded by some of the best spicy food on the planet. But there's plenty of spicy desserts. Like, I mean, again, if you consider cinnamon a spice, which it is, then a lot of desserts have spice in them.
I guess I'm thinking of spice as hot, so maybe I'm misinterpreting this conversation.
I feel like, I don't know, there's like a difference between like spice and spicy.
There's so many cool cookies and cakes that have like like black pepper or cardamom or chili in it. I mean, just a bunch of them that have some good. I'm trying to think of all the ones. One of my friends makes desserts all the time, and she plays around with this. I'm trying to think of some of the best ones that she had. But there's a bunch of spice cakes that are like kind of hot.
Yeah.
So good. I mean,
if we're talking black pepper, then we're talking literally the spice of life, literally the most basic spice besides salt.
When are they going to make me a beer candy? That's the question.
Those got to exist. Like, I don't know any offhand, but I'm sure somebody made. There's got to be a brewery somewhere.
They have wine. They have wine
IPA
gummies.
Candies.
That was just a bad
as
joke.
I'm sure Dave can attest.
I just want to drink it.
There's 100% beer candy.
Yes, as I'm sure Dave can attest, there's wine gummies in the United Kingdom.
Yeah,
man, just make those yourself. Vodka gummies are great. They expand so much.
Now we're talking. Yeah, that's that's. I feel like that's a Midwest summer staple. Well, I don't even know. I wouldn't say Midwest. It's probably beyond that, but
I've had Everclear gummy bears in Wisconsin.
Oh my god, have you ever been to a party that allowed children, and then you had to explain these gummies are not for you?
No,
I have.
The last time I was around a party that had gummy bears, I don't think there were children present, or they just did a really good job of hiding them.
I feel like gummy bears at any party that has adults should not be for children. They're either going to be alcohol or they're going to be pot related. So just stop.
What's wrong with that?
No, I'm fine with that. I'm just saying children should not be allowed at those parties.
Why not? I'm just kidding.
You know what we have? We have learned a lot about Mill this evening. That's what we have.
I'm just joking, you guys. I would never. Actually, I don't particularly like mixing candy with any type of substance because the sugar makes my stomach hurt. That's not saying I don't like how it tastes. I just have a bad stomach.
All right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground this evening, and this was Musings on Madison After Dark. We started this recording very late, so I think it's a perfect time to wrap up this episode, unless anyone else has any final thoughts. Guess not. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode. One thing I want to say, we have with all this transition and stuff that's going on, we might have like a no ratings or reviews at all on Spotify or various podcast sources. So if you want to go like start leaving us 5-star reviews and tell all your friends and family to spam some more of those 5-star reviews, we'd very much appreciate it. Put us right up on top of all the ratings so we can become the world famous best food themed hockey podcast on the internet that we all deserve to be. But that's going to do it for this edition of Musings on Madison. Keep an eye on the website and the new website for all the previews and recaps, because we're gonna do all our same stuff, just at a new place, I promise. So thank you to Mill and Shay and Betsy for hanging out this evening. Mill is on Twitter at Mill182. Shepard's at Jehosa's Witness. I'm at DMelt57. The main account is at 2ND City Hockey. And that's not going to change. Neither is the Facebook account that we have. So if someone asked about that today, that's all staying the same as well. Betsy's not on Twitter. She's at SecondCityHockey.com. And she'll be at the new website under the name LBR, where I'm sure the Boolean wall of text will maintain its walliness, I guess. I don't know.
Verboseness.
Boastness. There we go. Perfect. But that's going to do it. We'll be back next week with something. Well, maybe we'll be talking about the end of Jonathan Taves' career or his return to the ice or whatever the hell it is the Blackhawks do next. But we hope to have you back here to join us right on these airwaves, and we'll talk to you then. Socially, you lost your mind and basically